In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. In today's Gospel, Jesus has gone on the Sabbath day to have a meal at the house of one of the chief Pharisees. The Pharisees were one of the religious parties in Second Temple Judaism, along with the Sadducees, the Zealots, the Essenes, and eventually the Christians. And it's interesting to note that, well, today the word Pharisee is often used to mean a hypocrite or one concerned with legalisms and outward appearances, Jesus was actually on intimate terms with many of the Pharisees, such as Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, and also the host in today's gospel. But while Jesus agreed with the Pharisees on many of their teachings, such as the importance of the Torah or Jewish law, both oral and written, and synagogue worship and the study of the scriptures, and the belief in the resurrection of the dead, he also sought to purify their religious ideas and to open their hearts to a more profound understanding of their faith. And so in today's gospel, we see Jesus teaching the Pharisees in two ways. First, by healing a man afflicted with dropsy or edema, which is a swelling that is caused by an accumulation of fluid in the tissues of the body. He shows that it is permissible to heal on the Sabbath day. The Sabbath was made for divine worship and for human relaxation and enjoyment, and certainly we should not neglect these activities. But in an emergency situation, when the need for healing arises, we should not refuse to help. Indeed, compassion goes to the very heart of the Sabbath day observance, for it is ultimately concerned with the love of God for us and with our love for one another. The second thing Jesus teaches is about the need for humility. In the parable about a wedding feast, an image which Jesus frequently used to symbolize the kingdom of heaven, he tells us to think less of ourselves and of our own importance, and to take the lower place at table, and to wait to be called to a higher place. These two lessons, one of compassion, the other of humility, remind me of an idea that John Levinson, a great Jewish biblical scholar, has discussed in his book, Creation and the Persistence of Evil. And in that work, Levinson argues that we can see two complementary aspects of biblical theology in the Abraham cycle in the book of Genesis. In Genesis 18, Abraham encounters God as he is on his way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham tries to convince God to spare the city of Sodom if he can find 50, 45, 40, and ultimately only 10 good men there. Abraham does this by arguing that God should not be a God of justice and compassion if he destroyed the innocent as well as the guilty. But in Genesis 22, Abraham is ordered by God to sacrifice his son Isaac, and Abraham, to the surprise and puzzlement of many modern readers, meekly obeys this cruel and irrational command. Levinson goes on to say that the theology of Genesis 18 assumes a large measure of validity in human judgment over against the will of God. Divine speech is, or at least it can be, in the nature of a proposal that awaits human ratification. On the other hand, Genesis 22 assumes a theology in which there is no defensible alternative to the acceptance of God's will, and human dignity is a function of the completeness of our conformity to the divine command. The inclusion of these two perspectives in the same Bible, indeed in the same patriarch, yields a subtle and nuanced theology, one that cannot simply be reduced to either component. By itself, the theology of Genesis 18 would soon lead to a religion in which God's will had ceased to be a reality. The human conscience, having filtered out all divine directives that offended it, would produce a God that was only itself writ large. Genesis 22, on the other hand, by itself would lead to a religion of fanaticism, in which God would be so incomprehensible that even the praise of him as wise and just would be meaningless, and faithfulness to him would be indistinguishable from mindless, slavish obedience. These two perspectives delimit a theology in which human judgment neither replaces the inscrutable will of God nor becomes superfluous. In this larger dialectical theology, both arguing with God and obeying him can be seen as central spiritual activities. These two theological perspectives, independence and obedience, or in the context of today's gospel, compassion and humility, have assumed a deeper reality in the person of Jesus. Jesus felt free to expand and reinterpret the Jewish Torah, and thus he showed us that the deeper meaning of the law is to be found in human freedom and human flourishing. At the same time, he also gave us a perfect example of obedience to the will of his Father in heaven. Although he was in the form of God, he did not deem equality with God something to be grasped. Rather, he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in the likeness of men, and becoming human in every way. He humbled himself, becoming obedient unto death, even death on a cross. So we too, in the context of our own lives, are called to be both independent and obedient. We must have compassion for the weak and innocent and suffering, and we must not be afraid to use all our resources and gifts for the benefit of others. At the same time, we must be personally humble and must always be ready to accept God's call in our lives and to sacrifice ourselves, our interests and possessions, even ultimately life itself, in obedience to his will. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.